land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We are once again broadcasting via cell phone from the Bahamas. I know you're with us. How are you?
Good. You there, JB?
Hi.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, good deal. Well, hi, guys. If you guys wouldn't mind, could you give me a couple of minutes and go ahead and chat for a while? We're going to begin this evening on Ms. or actually on
Zachariah.
Ah, okay. I've resolved my problem. It was after our Labrador decided that she was going to counter serve after dinner, so she was sent off to have some quiet time outside on the aft deck of the boat, because counter surfing is strictly for boating. And then when, as the show started, I said, you know, I really need to let her back in so I know where she is. And she was nowhere to be found.
Oh.
And come to find out, she figured out a way back into the inside of the boat, went down to the master bedroom, and has fallen asleep.
That sounds like a laugh. Smart dog.
That sounds like a laugh. She was up on the we have a sky lounge here. She was up on it watching the sunset, but now has decided that if you're not going to play with me, if you're going to be mad with me, I'm now that I've got a full tummy, I'm going to go to sleep. So there we go. All right. Well, we're going to continue our analysis of what has become Volume 3, Chapter 2 of Observations for Our Time. The book, for those who are listening, is posted, JB, on your site, yawaharit.com, YAHOWAHDERYTH, which means Yahweh's Covenant Family.com. They're trying to have a more complete appreciation of the role that Doug David plays, not only in our understanding of who Yahweh is and what he's offering, not only in our ability to appreciate and observe the Torah, but what it means to be God's beloved son. Who is really the Messiah, Messiah? Who is the king of Israel? Who is returning with Yahweh? Who is the branch? Who is God's shepherd? All of these things are answered in the person of God. And we're going to turn to a passage that that actually caused a slip that is disappointing. But we had a doctor who was also had an affinity for physics and even biology that made considerable contributions to audio programs a year or so ago, who I understand still listens to the shows, but no longer contributes. I never see any correspondence from him anymore. That the severing of the relationship was largely a result of us disagreeing on who was being spoken of in Zechariah 3 and elsewhere in Zechariah. And it grew out of some of the backlash that began several years ago when we began developing an appreciation that the single most important person in human history is that he is the Messiah, which is unquestioned. He was Messiah three times by Yahweh. That he is God's beloved son. That he is the branch. That he is the king. That he is the shepherd. And subsequently learned that he's the one that's returning with Yahweh, not the ocean. The diminishment of Yahusha was very troubling for some. It isn't a diminishment of Yahusha. It's a Yahusha cannot be diminished any more than the concept of diminishment allows. He is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh by his own admission. Diminished from energy to matter, which is a diminishment of the square of this beat of light. So it's possible to diminish Yahusha beyond what he himself states. And Yahusha's role is really simple. He is the Passover lamb. That is his purpose. His purpose was not to communicate with us. If it was, we would have considerable citation from him in the language that he spoke, Hebrew, reliably retained for us to contemplate. But we have none of that. So here in Zechariah, the argument was made by really a good man. This is a scientist and doctor, a very rational and good man. I miss conversing with him. But he was convinced that this spoke of Yahusha, which means Yahusha is still around and it wasn't simply his existence wasn't completed with performing Pesach. But, gentlemen, that is not what I get when I translate these passages. I don't think there's any chance that this is Yahusha, the Pesach lamb. I think this is Yahusha, actually Yahushua, the high priest. And as the high priest, he has some attributes that and understandings that Yahweh thought were favorable, but some that were quite negative. And I don't think there's any chance that this dialogue was even remotely associated with Yahusha, the Passover lamb. And it expressly lists Dode as the object of the presentation as we go through. I'm sure you fellows recognize that that there was this separation between Roy and myself over this. I'm sure part of it, too, is that there was a fellow that I nicknamed Moody Jeff because he was educated at the Moody Theological Seminary. And he, in his emails to me, stated some things that, knowing Yahweh, that I recognize Yahweh view as extraordinarily inflammatory and inappropriate. And I said so. And I don't think he and those he was closest to liked the blunt assessment of what he wrote and were far more willing to be accepting than I think we should be or than Jaiwa is. So, fellows, before we begin this, I'm sure you've had a chance to read and to study Zachariah. What's your take?
JB, you want to go first, or shall I?
I actually have not had much of a chance lately to study on this. So.
All right. Well, let me tell you a couple of things that came up. I didn't view this as being Yahusha, the Pesach lamb, under any circumstance. And just as we're sitting here, I'm trying to envision somehow Yahweh saying to his own soul, choose to listen, please. I mean, that just doesn't resonate at all to me for no other reason, much less was he ever called a high priest. I mean, the Christians will make him into a high priest, but he never called himself a high priest. He was the Pesach lamb. So that part of the sentence right away is difficult to I'd have to twist it a little bit to do that. And we know it's not Joshua, the one they call Joshua. That's a different time and place. If it's not, it can't be Yahusha for a multitude of reasons. He just wouldn't be talking to him in this manner, nor would he have to tell him anything, much less what he's going to say a little bit later down here. He would already have known Dode was coming. He quotes Dode, for goodness sake. He knows Dode. So that's not an issue. So it has to be the high priest at this particular time that was using the name Yahusha. Now, one thing that was interesting to note, if I can take a little aside real quick, Yahusha, when you look it up in the most of the translators, the English translators, they will call him, instead of Yah, they will state that as Yahweh saving or Yah saves in the explanation, and which I find really troubling that they know, and they'll write his name down, Yahweh, Yahweh, and then the second word is Yasha, which is with the eye and the tooth, you know, the one who's paying the price. So they know exactly what the name means, which is very disturbing because they don't seem to know who Yahweh is or who Yasha. You know what I'm saying? It's like they know. And I'm just, I know they're crooked, and I know they're trying to twist it. They're the same evil people that he's talking to here that are hanging around this high priest. It's just, what is, how do they never come to the same conclusion that we see so easily? At least I think we see it easily, if you study a little bit. And then you're right, it's down a little bit later to the branch, and it's like, well, look up branch enough times, and you have Dode. And why
the presentation of branch, and not to mention the fact as we get into the third statement here.
Now, the only thing that did trouble me, and I was mentioning to you about that on the phone before we started, was that when you say, and your miserable associates, choose to listen, please, to Yahusha as the high priest, you and your miserable associates. And I was trying to, I know it's Rhea, and that's obvious, but you have to go through, if you're doing this for the first time, and I have a few friends that are now doing this, just beginning to translate, and you look that up in most of the lexicons, you're going to have some more positive words for Rhea than I can find. I guess I can find them, but they, when you have an R, a Rosh, and I aim, which is an I, you always would translate that. The first thought in my mind is this is a man with his man's view rather than man with Yahweh's view. There is a word, there is a root, which is a Rosh with an Aleph. And that would be someone who's looking at and considering Yahweh's viewpoint. But in this, so I'm trying to figure out how you came to that, and pretty much had to go through all the letters, and there's just nothing there that's not evil, companion, dysfunctional.
That is the single biggest problem, Kirk, with to, you know, and look for it in Strong's or any other lexicon, all you're going to see is that word, and that's the word based upon its diacritical markings. But when you look up rhea as a word in any lexicon and look at the words that are written identically prior to the Masoretic diacritical markings, which didn't even occur until the 11th century CE, all of the words are extraordinarily evil, adversarial, wicked, erroneous, improper, injurious. Ra and ra'ah, with the ain, is the Hebrew way of expressing evil. So since the word and every derivation of the word is evil, miserable, adversarial, just to render the word countryman, citizen, companion, associate, predisposes the notion that the Masoretic distinction written 1,600 years after Zechariah was inspired to convey these words is correct.
Yes.
And so, in all of my translations, the thing that I have attempted to do is to ignore the Masoretic. I realize that the entire Masoretic system is a hoax. It predisposed the idea that Hebrew, the Hebrew alphabet had no vowels, and it had to be vocalized with their diacritical markings so that we know how to pronounce the words. But that very concept is wholly and completely false. There are five vowels amongst the 22 letters. The ain and the alf, the wa, the yod, and the hey are all vowels, which means they're open mouth sounds as opposed to consonants, which are closed mouth sounds. And if you look at all of the most commonly repeated Hebrew words, you will find how each of the five vowels are pronounced. And so the very basis of it was from this. But what the Masoretes were able to do by applying their religious interpretations to these diacritical markings is they were able to change the meaning of words.
Mm-hmm.
And they were to create words that suited their viewpoint. So they could take a word like ra, which is evil, miserable, adversarial, and make it countrymen and neighbors through their diacritical marking. But that distinction
how convenient.
Is not available in the
past. How 1984 of them.
Yes. So I have just, I concluded it very long ago, that if you're going to translate Yahweh's testimony accurately and completely, you have to ignore the corruptions of the Masoretes. The Masoretes even called their system Shoah, which is a corruption of the Hebrew word or verb shav, which means to corrupt and to mislead. But they were very upfront about it. So I do not trust them. God speaks very harshly of them. And so all of the translations that I've attempted over these many years deliberately and expressly removes the influence of the Masoretic and strives to translate the word on the basis of the original Hebrew letters and to include every possible pertinent meaning within the context based upon the letters. And that's how I get the translation that we're about to consider here. Is there the possibility that they're right and I'm wrong? Yeah. Is there the possibility they're wrong and I'm right? Yes. And I think that the best way for anyone to validate who's right and who's wrong, and this is important because we're talking about the Word of God, is to have at least four or five lexicons where you can not only look up the word, but you can see all of the words that are written the same way in the original Hebrew text,
mm-hmm.
and also consider the root, the actionable basis of each word, then I think you're in a position to ascertain who's lying and who's telling the truth.
Yeah. And look at the context and how the word's used.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does that translation fit right. every time, or the majority of times, or does the other one fit the majority of times?
Yes. Yeah. And is there the possibility that there is a shading of countrymen and associates and neighbors, comrades, companions? Yes.
Yeah, because they were
but
to him.
Why would we be so presumptive to remove all of the negative and evil connotations of the word from those people without any justification for doing so?
Now, if they were the words for countrymen, he could have used family, Goyed nation.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. But didn't. And he could have used individuals, which is the most common word, you know, those individuals with you, who sit with you, which would have been Ish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or the men that sit with you, Adam, or the mortals that sit with you, Enosh.
Enosh.
Yeah.
So if he chose this word, it's for a reason, and it's most likely the nuances that the word conveys.
Correct.
If
my
was,
view is always that we should...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if this was Yahusha, then these miserable associates would have to have been his disciples. And they've seen an awful lot of miracles at this point, so I doubt if they were really so... in need of seeing a miracle. I mean, the whole context of this doesn't fit them, and so therefore it doesn't fit Yahusha.
Yeah, I would, by the way, use the term associate or neighbor or countryman with the disciples. Now, the Greek word disciple, I mean, of course, Yahusha didn't speak Greek, and it's probably lamed is the Hebrew word, which means one who learns. But in Greek, the term disciple is one who learns, so he probably used lamed, would have been the actual term. They were not associates. Associates means, you know, you're part of the same group at the same level, working together.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's what he's saying.
Horizontal relationship, yeah.
Yeah. There's none of that existed. Okay. It begins, choose to listen. Now, this is Shama. Of your own free will, listen. And they call imperative. The imperative can convey a command, but the vast majority of the time it expresses free will. Choose to listen, please. Na, I encourage you. Yahushua. Either Yahweh saves, which is the most logical basis based on Yao and Yasha, or Yahushua is cries out. It is not spelled the same way as Yosha. So there is a distinction between Yosha, the son of Nun, and Yosha here, the high priest. But immediately when you render this, Yahweh would never tell the Yosha who became the Passover lamb to listen. He would never tell Yosha who became the Passover lamb of your own free will. He didn't have any free will. He's apart from Yahweh. He
is the
stage to be. And he would never tell Mini-Me, please. So, choose to listen of your own free will. Please, I encourage you, Yahushua, as the high priest. Ha, Kohen, ha, Gadol. the most important and greatest one who presides over and meditates during a feast. Yosha was not a Lohi. He was not a priest. He was a Ya'ud. In the line of David, not in the line of Moshe. You and your, this is the Wa-Rea Atta. I have translated your miserable associates, including your evil and adversarial countrymen and your wicked neighbors, your erroneous comrades and improper and injurious companions. Now, for those who might say, why don't you just simply leave it at neighbors? Why give it all the negative connotations? Just because it's the same word, what is the justification beyond the fact that 95% of words written wrote, which is man's perspective, are negative?
Right.
Well, let's just look at what Yahweh has said throughout the book of Yashayahu, and what Dodis said throughout the Mizbah. Those who are associated with the religious establishment in Yisrael were universally evil. There isn't a single positive reference to them. They're all corrupt. And if, you know, you want to associate it with Yosha, what did he say every time he talked to the rabbis, to the Sadducees, to the Pharisees? They were like, boy, you are really smart. You guys are on the right track. You are really good men.
He says, go to the Torah, and you're like white men with sepulchres with empty on the bones on the inside, dead men's bones on the inside.
Right.
Those are not nice things to say.
So listen, please, as the high priest, you and your miserable associates,
yeah,
those who sit before you. My last time I checked, there was nobody sitting before you. But they do sit around the high priest, those who sit before you. Because mortal men, Inshi, inconspicuous miracles. That is one of the great problems of religiosity.
Yeah,
I just finished writing my commentary for the third chapter of Observations for Our Time, the third chapter, volume 3. And I open the chapter translating all of the volume 29, which is Moshe's speech to the children of Israel that has a reference to the Nakrit, because I just wanted to track down what God had to say about this this particular individual. And the opening of Devarim 29 says something that is remarkable. It says that rather than the English translation is that, which is that those who were listening to Moshe had witnessed these miraculous signs and wonders. It doesn't say that at all. What it says is that Yahweh made his signs, his communications regarding what was going to occur in the future, conspicuous so that we would know it. And when you translate it accurately, rather than showing off and becoming the God who is to be feared, which was the religious approach, God is saying that the first Exodus, that from Mitzrayim, from the crucibles of human oppression, is really a harbinger. It's a prophecy. It is a dress rehearsal for a bigger and more important Exodus, and that is of Jews from the three Babylons, political, religious, and geographic Babylon. And so what I learned is that God doesn't show off. He wasn't telling through Moshe, the children of Israel, boy, wasn't I impressive. Did you catch all those marvelous miracles that I had produced?
Oh, how great am I.
What he said instead was, everything that transpired during this Exodus is a conspicuous sign, a way of helping you understand what's going to happen in the future. And so when Noah says here that mortal men want miracles, they want miracles that mortal men create gods who cannot be known or proven. And thus the only way to get the people to capitulate is to scare them. So, you know, they threw people and burned them alive inside of those metal bowls. They cut people's hearts out while they were still alive in front of everyone. They burned people alive at the stake to create fear. You know, the priests would sacrifice humans and children to elicit fear. Because the god had to be powerful and fearsome for the people to obey. It's immortal men. Those that are dying. Humankind. They want conspicuous miracles because they're too damn lazy to read what Yahweh has to say and come to know him. So showing it. Show me a sign, God. Oh. Why should God show you a sign when you're too damn lazy to even read and consider what he had to say? Now, do you think that Yahweh is going to tell Yahusha, the Passover lamb, mortal men want a miracle?
He went through his whole life with people asking him for that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. So now pay attention. I myself will return and bring with me my associate branch.
The branch, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's God's conspicuous miracle. He's going to return with the branch. You remember when Yahweh was arguing with the king of Israel, and he was just belligerent, and the people were clamoring for a sign, a miracle that God was with them. And he was so disgusted with it. He said, okay, well, I'll give you a miracle. I'll give you a sign. A young woman's going to bear a son.
That's funny.
Okay. Consider that one. This one is, I myself am going to return and bring with me my associate, the branch. So, who's the branch? Why is Yahweh coming back with a branch? The principal limb, this is Shemach, the principal limb growing out of the trunk of a tree. It's, by the way, Yahweh's favorite metaphor for one individual in particular. Who is Yahweh? Routinely called a Shemach branch.
Always Dode.
Dode.
Always Dode.
Yes, Dode. Dode is the branch off the tree of lives. But here in Zechariah, which was written about 5 years after Dode, he says, I'm going to return and bring back with me my associate, my co-worker, the branch. Now, for those anticipating the second coming of Yahusha, Yahweh saves Jesus, Yahweh just told the high priest, Yahushua, as well as his compatriots, that he was bringing the Shemach branch with him upon his return. And that would be Dode. How's that for a wondrous sign? Especially if you are Yahuda or Yisrael. So it's interesting that Christians always refer to Jesus of Nazareth as if he came from the town of Nazareth. And it is of course, provocative because during the first century, there was no town of Nazareth. In fact, there was no town of Nazareth in the second century BCE, the first century BCE, or the first or second century CE. A town by an entirely different name once existed on that spot, but that town had been uninhabited hundreds of years before Yahusha. And there was no place called Nazareth until Thompson, Dean's mommy, came there and wrongly assumed lots of things. He was Yoga B. Nazir. Nazir is a secondary branch. But what does the Torah say? Is that Yoga will come from the branch of Dove.
Okay.
And so he is off of that branch, which means is a descendant of them. Now, what has become a fool's folly? Should there be some who remain in denial? With this statement, Yahweh has once again completely eliminated any possibility that Yosha is returning. God has been abundantly clear, telling us that he himself, as Yahweh, will arrive and reconcile his relationship with Yisrael, happens to be on Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliation. And while we have on occasion pondered the possibility that Yahweh would return in a far less diminished version of the post-Purim, and thus energy-based Yosha, since Yahweh has stated emphatically that he himself is returning with the branch, there is no room for Yosha. Because with Yahweh here, there would be no purpose for a simultaneous diminished manifestation of Yahweh.
It's redundant.
Slammed up.
Yes.
To me.
Slammed up. It's over. I'm sorry for those who have wrongly assumed that this speaks of what they knew as the Messiah. As a matter of fact, if you look on the Jews for Jesus site, they will cite this statement, and they will quote Zechariah as proof that Yosha is the Messiah and that he's returning. I'm sorry.
Then you have to rewrite everything backwards or twisted.
Well, of course. How in the world could you be so stupid to think that Yahweh is coming back, he himself is coming back, which is what he said, with a diminished manifestation. You know, Yahweh admitting me. I mean, come on. I mean, think, people. Don't mislead. Be rational. Yahweh is coming back with the branch. The branch is dead. Case closed. Well, God has made his point, like everything he reveals, the truth is so vastly different from what we've been beguiled in believing when dealing with the death of one of the world's most debilitating myths, the second coming of Jesus Christ. Affirmation after confirmation is appropriate. So here is a different prophet from yet another perspective on the same declaration. And this time, if it was not already abundantly obvious, the branch is even named. For those who may have protested under their breath a moment ago, suggesting that Yosha was also a branch, you may want to dine on this banquet of divine metaphors. Behold, pay attention. The days are coming, declares in advance of it occurring, Yahweh, when I will raise up and draw near with Dod, who is the branch. And he will reign as advisor and king, succeeding through understanding. He will act by engaging in the means to resolve disputes and exercise good judgment, being right throughout the land and earth. His days will be saved, and Yisrael will live confidently and securely. And this is the name by which to reveal the way to the relationship he will be called. Yahweh is right, honest, and fair with us. That is Jeremiah 23:5-6. mean, think of it. Behold, the days are coming, declares in advance of it occurring, Yahweh, when I will raise up and draw near with Dod, who is the branch. He is the Shemek, the Zach, the right branch, the righteous, rightful, correct, and validated, vindicated, and acquitted branch. And he will reign as an advisor and king, succeeding through understanding. You know, it's Dod that is the king of Yisrael, the one who is Masiach by Yahweh to be king, the one who will be king during the millennial kingdom. We should stop challenging this. We should stop being so misled by the Christian mythology and preoccupation with their Jesus Christ. There was no Jesus. There was no Christ. Yahusha was not Mashiach. And Dod was Mashiach. Yahweh is not coming back with Yahusha, and he is coming back with Dod. Yahusha is not going to be the reigning king during the millennial kingdom. It's Dod. God could not make it any clearer. Behold, the days are coming, declares in advance Yahweh, when I will raise up and draw near with Dod, who is the right branch, and he will reign as advisor and king, succeeding through understanding as a result of proper instruction and teaching. He will act by engaging in the means to resolve disputes and exercise judgment, being right throughout the land and earth. In his days, Da'udah will be saved, will be delivered and liberated, and Yisrael will live confidently and securely. Till the last time, Da'udah and Yisrael lived harmoniously, together, confidently, and securely, was under Dod. Mm-hmm. 3,000 years ago. And this is the name by which to reveal the way to the relationship he will be called. Yahweh is right, honest, and fair with us. You know, I just finished writing the commentary to Mizmor 6, and it's the third chapter of third volume of Observations for Our Time. And Dod began it by saying that, Yahweh, you prove your case through me. And what Dod is saying is what we concluded a long time ago. It's that Mizmor, that statement is really the personalization of Dod's Mizmor 19, where, you know, he talks about the power of the Torah to save souls. Dod represents all that is right, honest, and fair with Yahweh. He is the antidote for Pauline Christianity and the Christian New Testament. Dod, who was flawed, is considered right, honest, and fair, appropriate and vindicated. He is the right, the doc individual, because the Torah saved him. By being Torah observant, he was vindicated. A flawed individual was made perfect by the Torah. That's the opposite of the Christian and Pauline claim. And that is why Dod is being called Yahweh is right, because Dod was right, not Yahweh. Because Dod, a flawed individual, is returning with Yahweh and has been saved by Yahweh, proves that Yahweh is honest and fair with us. Those going to bear the name, Yahweh's right. I think that if you were to boil down the synthesis of what we've come to appreciate about Dote in the past 5 to 10 years, is first and foremost that Dote was right. That the difference between Dote and King Shaul, and I would also say that one of the apostles Shaul, Paul, is that they attempted to be good, at least King Shaul was perceived as being good, beautiful, articulate, handsome, charitable. And Dode was simply right. One was beheaded and has been condemned. The other is returning with God. So I ask you, if you were to boil it all down as the example of Dode presented to us, what's important, being good or right?
And right about Yahweh and his plan.
All that matters is being right.
Yeah.
Being right. And so Yahweh is saying that the conclusion that we've drawn, that the distinction that makes Dode so important is that he was right about God. And because he was so prolific in his writing, we can also be right about God based upon what he has taught us. That God himself says that he is going to be known by the moniker, Yahweh was right. I just love it. It's absolute affirmation that our conclusions about Dode are valid. Dode is right. And we want to be right. It's important that our viewpoints, our perspective, our understanding are consistent with those of Dove.
Agreed.
What a powerful statement.
Mm-hmm.
And our Heavenly Father has confirmed that Dode is the Tzedak, right Shemek branch, which is something we have observed and celebrated. So now in recognition of the fact that this is indeed true, Yisrael and Yehuda will soon come to understand that Dode is correct and trustworthy because Yahweh has been honest with all of us, especially when communicating to his beloved son. And therefore, if you are Yisrael or Yehuda, a Jew, listen to what Dode has to say. Agree with what he has written. Stop trusting rabbis and start trusting Dode David. Now here we find an affirmation that Yahweh is returning with Dode, his beloved David, not Yosha, Yahweh saved Jesus. We find confirmation that Yahweh has pronounced that Dode was and remains Tzedak, correct and right, vindicated and acquitted, truthful and honest, trusting and trustworthy. He is all of these things for the simple and profound reason that Yahweh is Tzedak, correct and right, vindicating and acquitting, truthful and honest, and thus trustworthy and dependable. In and during the millennial Shabbat, I know this is really controversial, but it is what Yahweh himself has conveyed. Dode will be virtually indistinguishable. Yahweh. Dode will be Yahweh's personification, if you will, on earth.
Well, aren't we supposed to be like him?
Dode will be as God. Now that, I know, sounds so inappropriate to have this one man be said that he will be as God. But think about it for a moment. That's going to be true of all of us who are part of the covenant. What God's promised to do for all of us. It's just that Dode is first and foremost among us. And that's never going to change. this realization is the antidote for the putrid plague of Pauline Christianity, for the arrogance of Akiba's rabbinic Judaism, and for the murderous nature of Muhammad's Islam. It is also the answer to the supposedly rational and enlightened pronouncements of the politically correct and multicultural socialist secular humanists. Daoud is correct. Beyond this, Yahweh is presenting Daoud as the one through whom he will Yasha, save, deliver, and liberate Israel and Yehuda, such that his people will live confidently and securely. And the list of titles reflecting the attributes of Daoud, we have seen repeatedly that we must add Yasha, Savior, to Daoud Ben, beloved son, Mashiach, anointed Messiah, Melech King, Shamach Branch, Ra'ah Shepherd, and Kampf Hand. That is indeed an impressive resume, the finest the world has ever seen. Please, wake up, Yehuda. Come to your senses, Yisrael. Stop being so damn stubborn. Your King, Savior, and Messiah is right here before you. Make no mistake, Daoud is our Savior because he will engage and act upon expending the energy to accomplish the Mishpat, the means to resolve disputes and exercise good judgment. And when it comes to making sound decisions based on evidence and reason and asking all of the right questions before determining what is appropriate and reasonable, fair and right, just and vindicating, he will most assuredly be Sadaka, right, always accurate and honest. Now, with this treasure among our collection of profoundly important insights, how about the juxtaposition of these two statements concerning a covenant of salt? The first is found in Kara, called out Leviticus 2:13. And the entirety of your offer to approach the relationship should have you actually and consistently season an insult such that your impurities disappear. And therefore, you should never cease seizing and adorning the covenant relationship of your God with salt, making it part of your offering. With all of your offers to approach the life-giving association, you shall approach by bringing salt. Kara called out Leviticus 2:13. This is Karban, Minthok, your free will gift as a sign of appreciation to apportion and bestow friendly and close contact while being offered a share as an inheritance. Should have you actually consistently season it with salt such that your impurities disappear. Baha Milak. Milak, you should adorn yourself with a white garment which causes anything which prevents preservation to no longer be seen. And therefore, you should never cease seizing and adorning the covenant relationship if you're caught with salt, making it part of your offer. With all of your offers to approach the life-giving association, you shall approach by bringing salt. You should offer to season, enhancing the flavor with salt, to draw near a garment cleansed with and as white as salt. Coming close by having impurities finished such that they disappear and are unseen as a result of salt. Now, this is the covenant of salt, and it's explained in Dabri Ha Yomim, the words of the day, 2 Chronicles 13:5. Do you know that indeed Yahweh, God of Israel, gave authority and sovereignty over to Dod forever, to him and his son, by a covenant of Saul. Now, those are two amazing statements juxtaposed from Devarim HaYomim Chronicles and called out Leviticus, Kara. Are you not aware that indeed Yahweh, our God, the God of Israel, gave authority and sovereignty the realm and the kingdom of Israel to God forever, to him and to his sons by a covenant of Saul. Forever. Now, quite honestly, the statement in Kar Leviticus was a challenge to translate. Karban, while typically rendered offering, is obviously from the verb with the same spelling, as well as being associated with several other nouns and adjectives, each of which are written identically. Collectively, they speak of approaching and coming near, voluntarily presenting oneself so as to participate in a very close, intimate relationship, one which could be initiated during a time of strife, thereby symbolically returning to the womb, appreciating the warm, affectionate, and nurturing aspect of life-giving association. So Karban's a covenant-esque term. Now he's followed by Minka, which is a gift or offer, this time in conjunction with the pronoun Atayu. Its root means to apportion itself. It could be defined as sharing an inheritance, which is given to covenant members. This leads us to the repetition of Malach, which is a noun, or as a noun, is often conveyed as salt, but even more commonly translated clothing. As a verb, it means to season, and thus to enhance the flavor of something with salt, to rub and wash garments with salt, and to have impurities vanish such that they disappear and are unseen as a result of salt. That becomes particularly interesting when we acknowledge that the preferred definition of Malach isn't salt, but instead garments, clothing, and apparel which cover the body. Twice it's used to describe a rotten, filthy rag, which once washed in salt becomes a pure white garment. This is all about the purpose of salt, which is to clean, to whiten, and to preserve garments, and to add flavor to the relationship for those who voluntarily offer to approach and draw near in an intimate association with God. As a result, when we enter the covenant home, we appear perfect while retaining all the marvelous flavors of our personality, which makes us interesting. Furthermore, the fact that this is a covenant of salt and it was made with Dod encompasses the covenant and is everlasting. It means, of course, that Yosha cannot reign over Israel because Yahweh gave this position and inheritance to Dod forever. And it makes perfect sense, because why on earth would God want to put a crown on a diminished manifestation of himself? Men are prone to narcissism, not God. The likes of Dod is the reason the universe exists and that life was conceived and the Torah was conveyed. God did not have to create the universe, did not have to conceive life, did not have to convey the Torah, to have a conversation with the ocean. Is simply a diminished manifestation of God.
He did that at any time.
He wanted a family, and the first and most loved son in that family is Dod. So, as a proud father, what's he going to do? pat Minnie Me on the back and say, attaway, kid? Or say, you know, I did this because I like this fella. This fella is right about me. I enjoy his intellect. I enjoy his passion. I enjoy his commitment to know and share the truth. And so, you know, Yahweh is going to do as he has always done. Work through men. And he is going to perfect his relationship with Israel and Yahudah with the most imperfect of all souls. So, the covenant of salt also suggests that there is a direct and eternal correlation between our desire to approach Yahweh during the Mikre, the covenant, and this exceptional individual, Dove, with the combination as enduring and spicy as salt. Salt is not only a preservative, an antibacterial treatment, and flavor enhancer, it's highly sought after and valued. And when it is shared, when I give you some of mine and you offer me some of yours, when mixed together, the result becomes inseparable, with mine and yours indistinguishable. Now, in the unlikely event that you or someone you love is caught up on the fact that both has been declared as the king, the eternal king of Israel, and not the sovereign of the Gentiles, then you want to consider and share some of the completing thoughts in Mizmor 18, particularly statements 41 through 50. This discussion opens with Dod revealing that Yahweh does not answer nor say those who do not know him. It reads, desperate. They cried out and pleaded for help, but there was no Savior, for Yahweh did not answer. So I polarized them accordingly, as if they were dust before the presence of the Spirit, as if they were the muck and mire of the broad and open way. I cast them out, expelling their delusions and fantasies. So, gentlemen, if Dod is being called, Yahweh is right, and his approach to the muck of religion is to cast them out as if they were the dust of the earth, expelling their pathetic delusions and fantasies. How should we respond to religious rhetoric?
Well, the same way, or else the plague goes on. The whole thing is to kill the disease.
Yes. You know, when those we love contract one of the most debilitating diseases, because the cells in our body replicating in a very unhealthy and uncontrolled fashion. The solution is never, let's just live with it. Let's accept it. Let's try to integrate it within the family of healthy cells. Let's make an accommodation for it. Let's be multicellular and loving and accepting. Now, what do we do when we have an invasive disease within our body?
You cut it out.
We cut it out. We try to kill it. We separate it from our bodies. Well, there is no disease that has been anywhere near as deadly as religion. And so when Dod experiences it, he cuts it out, expelling their pathetic delusions of fantasy, and does so in the presence of the Spirit of Yahweh, as if they were muck and mire He has no regard for them. What this is saying is that I was right in the way I responded to Moody J all those years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If Dode is right and we act similarly, we're right. I know that isn't what a lot of people want to hear. They want us to be accommodating and accepting and nurturing and supportive and kind. That's not the teaching, the life, the rhetoric, the attitude of Dode or his God, you know. And if the choice is to be considered generous and kind and loving, or being right, I'm here to tell you, being right matters. The realization that Yahweh, go ahead, Kirk, please.
No, I'm just saying I haven't totally agreed. It's nice to be polite to people, but when we talk about Yahweh's plan and Yahweh's versus religion and the things that have killed billions of people. My mother, my father, my grandfather, my grandmother, name them. It's just all the family that's still alive have rejected this because they're so indoctrinated with this goddamn Christianity. It's horrible. So I can start with this, yeah. Do it. Kill it.
Kill it. When Yahweh comes back, one of the reasons he's coming back with Dode is that no one fought harder to protect Yisrael and Yahudah than Dode. And Yahweh is not going to accommodate or accept Christians or Muslims or rabbinic Jews. Everyone's going to die. At least all of those that have promoted those religions. There is a suggestion from Yah, overt statements from Yah, that some of the Qur'an, for a while, are going to be made to serve Yahudah. But I think that time of service is going to end in incarceration, and I think the time of service is only because it is required to be just. I think I shared a week ago that I have been reading Popes Against the Jews. Not long after I read Hitler's Pope. And the deplorable attitude and abuse that popes in the Roman Catholic Church perpetrated on Yehuda for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, mm-hmm. and continue to perpetrate on Jews, even quite recently, has to go punished. Has to be punished. It cannot go unnoticed. It is far too demeaning, far too horrible.
And that's right there.
For the victims not to have justice done, and for the perpetrators not to be made an example of. It could be said that perhaps second only to Islam, the Roman Catholic Church has been the most anti-Semitic organization in human history. Now, that does not exonerate Protestant Christianity, because it was born out of Martin Luther, who was even more anti-Semitic than the vast majority of popes. But he had very little power. And the popes had ultimate power throughout Europe. And they made certain that Jews not only remained in ghettos with no power, but they were abused in every possible way, humiliated in every possible way. And God's not going to disease of Roman Catholicism, the disease of Martin Luther created Christianity, the disease of the Pauline New Testament, the putrid disease, the deadly disease that is Islam, will have to be uprooted and discarded. Those saying that he did it, and those right. There is also the realization here that Yahweh does not listen to nor answer people's pathetic and desperate prayerful pleas for salvation. And that's something, it says, remember, desperate, they cried out for help, but there was no Savior. Yahweh did not answer. That's something that should be plastered in every church, every synagogue, every mosque, and hung on every dining and bedroom wall. God does not answer the pathetic and desperate pleas for help. For those who cry out to him, there will be no Savior.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact wording or the exact verse, but it reminds me of the one where, you know, Yahweh said, you know, the prayers of those who aren't observant are an abomination.
And yeah.
Butchering the exact wording. I don't remember it exactly off the top of my head, but.
Yeah, he said the prayers of those who are not sure observant are an abomination, that he sees the prayers, their prayers, and those praying as if they had hung all over their faces. And it should be this way. If you're blabbering to God, making all of your requests to God, and you're not willing to listen to him and heed his requests, why in the world would he listen to you? I've taken a lot of time, the last 18 years, studying Adam's testimony. Learned a lot, I've shared a lot. But man, it's far and long time in between that I make a request to you. I just very seldom cry out to him for help. And I most certainly never bow my head, get down on my knees, or fold my hands and close my eyes in prayer. Ever. Ever. My relationship with Yahweh, and it's a good one, works because I listen to him, I observe what he had to say, think about it, and share it. Accept it, act upon it, and when he's communicating to me, and I'm sharing what he has to say, our relationship works beautifully. Well, I get in the way and start telling him, this is what I want, this is what I think. There's nothing that productive happens. There is nothing in my life that I've ever thought that's superior to what God knows. I have no need and never have had one that is important to the reason we were created that Yahweh overlooked. And quite frankly, if my every ailment were resolved, if my every financial desire was fulfilled, if my family relationships were all perfected, then I'd be a really crappy witness on behalf of Yahweh. Because everybody say, well, it's easy for you to say, look at your life. Everything's perfect. I would have no empathy, no understanding, no appreciation in particular for the plight of Noah. Until we suffer fractured families, until we suffer pain, until we suffer rejection, we really don't have any appreciation for what Yahweh has endured with his people and his creation. And empathy is essential for understanding and perspective. So there really is a lot to this, and it's just like everything we turn to, we can learn a great deal if we're willing to listen to what God says. Don't cry out for help. The last thing God wants to hear is, God, please save me. You know, if you're part of this covenant family, if you listen to, come to appreciate, act upon the terms and conditions of the covenant, you've responded to his invitations to meet seven times a year during the Mikre, you've been observant, close examining and considering his Torah instructions, you're guided by his prophets, then he's going to make you immortal, perfect you, adopt you into his family, enrich and empower you, enlighten you beyond your wildest imagination. Such as salvation.
He's already done everything he can to save you. The ball's in your court now. He's done his part. It's all on you at this point.
Yes. And if your goal is to be saved, he doesn't want you. If your goal is to engage in a relationship that is mutually interesting and beneficial, then he absolutely will save you so long as you approach him in accordance with what he's offering. If you want to tell him, hey, God, you know, you ought to save me because I've done this, that, or the other thing, or if you save me, I'll do this, that, and the other thing, he's got no interest in you. It's his own, his rules. Listen to what he has to say. And as a byproduct of what he has promised, he'll save you. But not just because that's what you want. And I would also say to people, save to whom and to what? You know, if salvation means no religion, no politics, no government, no patriotism, no Jesus, no Christ, no Allah, no jihad, no faith, no gospel of grace, no New Testament, what in the hell would a religious, political person want? Or what would they would hate it?
I had a family member got irate when I even remotely suggested the idea that there wasn't just two destinations, heaven and hell. And their point was, yeah, well, why would anyone, you know, come to know God if that's not the case? And I'm like, so your relationship with God is based on convenience alone? That's pretty hollow. Yeah. If your only reason for coming to know God is to be saved, that's a hollow relationship, and God has no interest in that.
What do you say?
It's like saying that that somebody has a relationship with somebody because they give them money.
Yes.
Because they provide a comfortable lifestyle. You know, if somebody, for example, comes to America because they want welfare, they want food stamps, they want entitlements, then they're a net drag on the country.
Yeah,
if you want to come to America because you'd like to make a contribution, because you like what the country stands for and you think that you can make it better and grow as a result, then by all means. But if you're here for what you're going to get out of it, go away. And that's the same thing with the other one. If your only reason for wanting to be saved is what you get from it.
Fear of hell.
Right. If it's fear of hell, then I got news for you. Don't worry about it. You're not going to hell.
So how would you like to have a relationship with someone who the only reason they're there is because they're afraid of a consequence of not being there? They don't have any interest in you. They don't want to converse with you. They don't share common interests. They're just afraid of what would happen if they're not there. How much are you going to enjoy that relationship?
Well, you know, religion exists to empower certain men over the masses. So that's the primary reason that religion exists. It's a means to power and control. But the reason that religion prevails is because of fear of death. Fear of death and fear of torture. And so
fear of
life. Practitioners of religion have long used torture and death as a way to scare people into capitulation. Just as the fear of torture and death is used in Christianity and in Islam to get people to surrender, to submit.
Those are fear of torture, solutions. Fear of death, the promise of being reunited with your family and eternal grandness. Carrot and stick. It's coercion, pure and simple. Yeah.
And it's inconsistent with the Doe's testimony. So what did Doe did? He acknowledged that desperate, that Yahweh did not save them, did not answer their plea for help. So he pulverized them accordingly, as if they were dust, as if they were the muck and mire of the broad and open way, which is Christianity. He cast them out, expelling their pathetic delusions and fantasies. You enabled me to survive in the midst of the contentious and quarrelsome disputes of the people and nations. You placed me as the head of the Gentiles, a people, cultures, and countries estranged from Israel. People and nations I have not known such that they will engage with me. Well, Mizmor 18:43. That's something, isn't it? So, Dode, who died 3,000 years ago, is telling Yahweh, you enabled me to survive. You delivered me. You saved me, making me safe and secure in the midst of some very unfavorable circumstances, in the midst of quarrelsome disputes of the people and of nations. All right? You could say that to some extent that Yahweh did that during Dode's original life, but Dode didn't survive death. He died 3,000 years ago. But then it says, you placed me as the head of Goyim, Rosh, La Rosh Goyim, of Gentiles, of people, cultures, and countries estranged from Israel.
You sure this isn't talking about Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles, in his dreams?
Yeah. You know, God did not place Dode as king of the Gentiles. But in this statement, Dode is acknowledging that looking to the future, Dode is going to be king of everyone, of all people and cultures, even countries estranged from Israel, Goyim, those who are not Yehudim Jews. It's interesting that the person who listened to one of the radio shows they did recently pointed out, and I should probably point out, that while Goyim means those who are not Yehudim, those who are not Israel, its ethnicity is distinct from the Hebrews. It is a enormous confluence of ethnicities, of large and varied population groups with different geographical locations, those who are either uncultured pagans and heathens. But, you know, it speaks of those who are either opposed to or hostile to, incongruous with Israel. The term Goyim was usurped in Latin by Rome, such that Gentile became a Latin word to mean non-Roman. So its meaning was the same, albeit from the perspective of Rome. So when we use the term Gentile, it's really a transliteration of the Latin term Gentile, which meant non-Roman, and therefore the Latin usurped it from the Hebrew, and Goyim means non-Jewish, non-Yehuda, non-Israel. But here it says, you place me as the head of the Gentiles, of people and cultures and countries estranged from Israel, people and nations I have not known, such that they engage with me. Now, there was a nation of Goyim. That's not even true. I was going to say there was a nation that Dod conquered that wasn't technically Israel, but I'm wrong in that. He conquered Moab.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're related.
The Moabites were ethnically Jews. Lot, who was Abraham's nephew, impregnated his daughter to give birth to Moab. That makes the ethnicity of Moab the same as the ethnicity of Israel. Ruth was from Moab. Ruth was what, Dod's great-grandmother?
Mm-hmm.
Ethnically, she was Jewish. So, and moreover, Dod knew the Moabites. He, you know, there was a period of time before he conquered them, he sent his parents to safety. Yeah. So, for Dod to say, you have placed me as the head of the Gentile cultures, nations and countries estranged from Israel, people and nations I have not known, that they will engage with me.
That's a brilliant point.
We're talking about the future here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's talking about the future.
Really no other option.
Goyim will one day work cooperatively with Dod. You know, fellas, I think the three of us and a lot of those who are now translating and contributing to the covenant with us, well, about half or more are ethnically Jews, there's a lot of us who are loyal. Mm-hmm. And we're working with Dod, right? We're engaging with him.
We're sharing out a warrant.
Really impressive with them. They will work with me, acting upon what I have had to say, even sharing, serving along with me. That's what Dod is wrote, and that's what I think we're doing. But this clearly is, as Pope it was speaking to the future. There's also perhaps an ode to what we are doing when Dod spoke of being a car, the observant foreigner before his son described his purpose. This reads, once he listened to the message, they listened to me. Those who brought into the family, those brought into the family by the foreigner who paid attention and came to understand that car, they have come to know that they have been deceived about me. That's 1844. The newly born members of the family associated with the observant and discerning foreigner, that car, had been slaves to fools and were concerned about their future. And so they were naturally angry, anxious, and trembling outside of their enclosures, 1845. This seems to also support the idea Kirk?
Yeah, I'll say that touches a nerve. That's exactly what most of us came looking for. I mean, when it resonated with us. And the fact that we've learned so much about Dod and that we can dismiss the Christian myth of the second coming of Jesus Christ, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
It's all encapsulated in that.
Yeah, and this is the progression. Once they listen to the message, they listened to me. So, once he listened to the message, they listened to Dod. And that's what we're doing. He was brought into the family by the Nakar, the foreigner who paid attention and came to understand they had come to know that they were deceived about me. And, you know, we have been on a consistent path for probably most of the past 5 years to say that the world has been universally deceived about Dode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dode is the Messiah. Dode is the beloved Son of God. Dode is right. His name is Dode. It means beloved son. Beloved, he is the Ben, Son of God. So those brought into the family, those added to the covenant, Bobby and that car, the foreigner who paid attention, he came to understand, they have come to know that they have been deceived about me. The newly born members of the family associated with the observant and discerning foreigner in that car had been played for fools and were concerned about their future. And so they were naturally anxious and trembling outside of their enclosures. You know, since the number of naturally born sons of the car, observant and discerning foreigner, are few, it seems appropriate to render Benny as those brought into the family, recognizing that they represent newly born covenant members.
Sure.
They would have previously been open-minded and receptive, religious or secular Jews, questioning Christians or rational agnostics. Therefore, each and every one will recognize as a result of the Nakar's translations and analysis that they had been deceived regarding the author of this song, Dode. I mean, before us, who even referred to him as Dode?
Nobody.
DWD means beloved. You know, that's how his name is written. Beloved. Beloved. Dode. We are the first and only folks that are calling him by his correct name. And his name is so important because he embodies what Yah is seeking, to love us as his children.
Yeah.
He is much more unique and important, indeed relevant and enlightened than anyone had previously perceived. Every new covenant member will not only understand that they have been deliberately misled by all the mythos about Jesus Christ, all of this will be so new to them and so counter to everything mankind promotes as beneficial and correct, they will naturally be worried about their future, indeed even a bit anxious. The confidence that Dode expresses, and that those who have worked alongside thee in that car these many years have come to enjoy, it grows over time. I mean, I know with both you, Kirk, and your wife, Terry, and with JB and your wife, Patty, and I think JB may have gone off to put his daughter to bed.
I'm still here.
Encouraging attention. And for both of you, it was immediately obvious that these translations were accurate and that the message resonated with you. But it really takes a while to go from this is profound and true and affirming to confidence. Confidence grows over time. The more you see, the more you know, the better you understand, the more confident you become.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't start off confident. Would that be true for both of you?
Yeah, but it does grow exponentially later. You get enough foundation, all of a sudden you start seeing, you know, this and then this, and then that connects that dot, and that connects that dot, and it just really, you don't just go one step at a time. You go quite a few leaps. And so it's wonderful.
And we start off a bit anxious. I mean, the message of Dode, the message of the Torah, the message of Yahweh is so different than what we've been interpreted and told to believe and what society holds as true, that there's some anxiousness starting out. It goes away with time and with studying with knowledge. So every new covenant member will not only understand that they've been deliberately misled, all of this would be so new to them, so counter to everything mankind promotes. But they are going to be initially, we all were, worried about our future, indeed a bit anxious. Confidence grows that those who have worked alongside us these many years know that. So we should not only expect, but we should be sympathetic to the fact that those striving to survive the deadly and deceitful time of Jacob's troubles will remain somewhat apprehensive. I mean, imagine growing up Jewish, you know, with all of the harassment and insults, the horror of the Holocaust, and the rise of anti-Semitism, and this still clinging together as a culture, only to find that the political and religious leaders within your culture have not only been wrong, been dead wrong.
Yeah, purposely lied.
Yeah. It's like me when I grew up in a Presbyterian church, only to learn that those I trusted, good men, I mean, they were genuinely kind individuals, but they were just wrong. You know, it's, but I can't tell you, because I've shared this in the past of how Falwell acknowledged that everything that I learned was true and that that he recognized that what he was saying was a lie. The reason that hurts so badly and was so frustrating is he was such a nice and kind man. But, you know,
and care about your
soul. Nothing kind. Yeah, there's nothing kind about leading people astray, particularly for money. Fact is, I receive questions all the time from covenant members who are still seeking to understand aspects of Yahweh's guidance. So it's natural to be anxious, particularly initially, about such things, especially when the answers are so contrary to what we've been told. So God is being real with us, telling Israel and Yahudah on the cusp of his return with Yahweh that he recognizes that they will be apprehensive. But given time, their newly found passion for Yah will cause them to sing very similar songs. Yahweh lives, so blessed and beneficial is my rock. Exalted high above is the God of my salvation. Maybe this is a good place to pause. We covered a lot of very controversial turf. And you know, in some way, I'm uncomfortable that we're continuing to hammer this one point that goes right. That if we want to be right with God, we need to learn from him. We need to recognize the sign that God's seen up in the last days is comprised of Yahweh's word, that Yahweh's returning with dove, that dove is going to be as God, the shepherd for his people, the king of the world. I need to have an appreciation for the importance, relevance of dove. And, you know, I know there's lots of other things to share. But perspective is the mother's milk of understanding. And understanding is the most important thing we can achieve in life, particularly when it pertains to God. And understanding is possible without right information, the right perspective, and accurate evidence. Most accurate input comes from doubt. The best perspective, the most profound insights. And so this is not a an ongoing commitment to Domitiosha because of what he did as the Pesach lamb, and what his soul did for us on Matzah. Without Yahweh fulfilling those promises, we remain estranged from him and most certainly would die.
Mm-hmm.
It is instead a realization that all of this was done for the likes of Dode. The Dode is the epitome of what God desires. And while he was a bit of a rascal, while he had his flaws, Dode was right about Yahweh. He used his intellect. He used his sense of logic and reason to come to understand who Yahweh is and then passionately share what he had learned. The more our lives mirror his, the better our relationship will be with God. The more people we will come to know Yahweh. So there is a reason behind all of this. It's not to be controversial. It's not to be demeaning or pejorative. It is simply to share one of the most important realizations that we as people can need. The Dode's Mizmor songs, his Mishal proverbs, his life lyrics do more for us than anything, than perhaps the Torah itself, to explain who God is, what he is offering, and what he expects in return.
Hear, hear.
Yep. Yeah. Fellas, I would say happy Shabbat.
Happy Shabbat to you.
Enjoy the rest of your Shabbat, and I look forward to being with you this time next week, and we'll hopefully conclude our presentation of the second chapter of the third volume. And we may proceed directly into the third chapter. I should have all the commentary and the translations complete by this time next week. It is a real eye-opener, particularly Devarim 29, but then again, how easily it is to misinterpret Mizmor 6 and how profound 6 and 7 are when translated accurately and how all those plays into us knowing and understanding now.
Okay. Sounds good.
So thank you.
All right.
Have a wonderful week. We'll commence here when we start again.
Good night, y'all.
Sounds good.
Good night. Good night. Shalom. Shalom.
Shalom. It's all yours.